Welcome to Wellness Radio with Dr. Jeanette Gallagher as your host. Her show discusses topics of health, wellness, and spirituality and is about discovering your place in this great universe from your cells to the cosmos. Along with her guest, in casual conversation, she strives to ask the difficult questions that may be holding you back from a vibrant life and shares new ideas that may inspire you to make a change in your life that you only can see in your dreams. And now, here is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Wellness Radio. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here this evening. Tonight, we are going to be talking about your soul, heart. What is it all about? What are we really doing? Did we come into this world and, hey, we're just dropped on the earth, live out your life, you know, follow everybody else, follow the leader, this is what you do. Is that the journey that we're really here for? How has life changed and evolved over the decades? And are we looking for something, I'll use the word grand, or I'll use bigger, or more engaged in life versus having the house, the dog, the kids, the obituary that's out with all the letters? What really is the purpose of life? People say through religion, you came in with a soul. We can read the religious documents, and this is what your soul's all about. Take it, leave it, pray for it. This is the way it's supposed to be. Is that really the path we're on right now? My guest today is Robert Atkinson. The book we'll be talking about today is Mystic Journey, Getting to the Heart of Your Soul Story. Bob, thank you so much for joining us today. It's such a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
So, Bob, don't you think sometimes we say, you know, there's old paradigms, you know, we got dropped here, this is what we're supposed to do. But now there is such a evolution or a transformation that just does not suffice anymore. And people are really saying, there's got to be more to life. There's got to be more to my being. How did I get here? What is this all about? Don't you think?
Yeah, I think a lot more people are saying that now these days. And there's so much more. We have so much more access to knowledge and wisdom, the world's wisdom, than we had, you know, a dozen or 50 years ago, of course, with the internet and everything. And so we're more aware of the world's traditions and what they really have to say about this mystery of where we come from. I use in the book one interesting legend that maybe most well-known in the Jewish legend, but it is from many other traditions as well. It's about the angel and the unborn soul. And that really kind of is the basis of the book and gives us an idea of where we've come from and where we're going, why we're here. So the short version of that story is that after 9 months in the womb, an angel comes to tell the soul one more time, the time has come for you to go forth into the world. But the soul objects strenuously, saying, no, I like it here. Why should I go? The angel replies, as you were formed against your will, so shall you be born against your will, and you will die against your will. The soul continues to resist, but is brought forth into the world anyway, kicking and screaming. And immediately the child forgets all that it has learned as an unborn soul. And that's what our life is about, to remember where we came from, remember who we are, where we're going and why we're here. Came to us as an unborn soul, and we forget it as soon as we're born. Our life is a process of trying to remember that.
Right, because, you know, it really is about, I think, people saying, I learn everything from history. I need to know about it from books. Or people need to tell me, and then they proceed, you know, all of that dogma or other people's stories or other past failures of society or civilizations or whatever, and they kind of form their future on that. But really now we're at the point of, when we talk about remembering and all of this, we're really at the point of not dragging all of that dogma with us and knowing that we can create something more for this life, yes?
Right, yeah. Our life in this world, we come into this life with an adventure waiting for us as we're born. And, of course, we don't usually become aware of that fact or that process that life is an adventure until maybe adolescence, if we're lucky, but usually not until early adulthood, after we've been through all the formal schooling and everything, and then we maybe have a chance to take off on our own, do something that we've always wanted to, and that's when we really come face-to-face with that call to adventure, which takes us down that journey of remembering who we are and discovering our soul and asking the big questions of life. But that's all mm-hmm. born within us.
You talk about in your book, soul making is about preparing for our reunion with our Creator. It's a lifelong process, and it's needed for our eternal journey. Why now, do you think? Because we couldn't have this conversation even 10 years ago, probably not. And why now do you think people are speaking more? Or is it potentially that we've all been speaking and acting and doing and going along this path, and now it's just that we're starting to have more language and verbs and be able to say it and speak out more, so we're kind of like collectively being, quote, heard. Our collective voices are being a little louder.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I think it's a little more of the latter, because what you're just asking about now is something that the world's mystics have known and talked about forever. But we're the rest of us who may not think we're mystics are just getting to that point of realizing some of those kinds of questions and beginning to ask them more now than we ever have before. But the interesting thing is that we're all human beings are born mystics. We don't wake up knowing that, and some of us don't even discover that by the end of our lives, but we all really are, because we have the same potential, which is realizing our union with our Creator. That's what the mystic journey is really about, is understanding that life is about regaining, remembering that we all come from the same Creator, and that's basically what the mystics have known throughout time.
It's really interesting. I had someone, I really thought his books were really kind of interesting on Facebook, and I offered a guest spot, and I said, I'd love to have you come on, talk about your books. So he emails me back, and he says, well, you're really a universalist mystic, so I don't think we would mesh. And then I was kind of like taken aback, and I said, okay. You know, and I said, well, kind of I believe that the world is here for all voices and all souls, and I love to share everything and anything to be able to bring forth, you know, our words. Not that we're all in cohesive agreement with this one paradigm. We're just all parts of it. And he just kind of went, no, thanks. And I went, oh, okay, you know. And I think the idea that just to experience everything and anything of life is just such a grand thing each day. But what is life really made of? Because we can look at the other side, and we have people who are saying, I have to get up, I have to go to work, I have to do this, I have to do that, I got to do this, I got to do that. And it's such a contrast, yes?
Yes, for sure. And the thing that we don't seem to remember as much as we should is that as human beings, we're all much more alike than we are unalike. And so whether we acknowledge it or not, we have all those things in common with one another. And that's really such a profound and important piece of the whole picture that we're trying to get a better sense of. If we understood that as human beings, we're all so deeply connected and so interrelated and literally related, because as the discovery of DNA has shown, we're no more than any of us are no more than 50th cousins to each other. So we're literally related as human, you know, as members of the human family. And once we understand that, we, you know, the universal perspective has much more meaning and significance and relevance for today.
Right, and I think pretty much I see it as we're so connected to everything and anything in the universe. I mean, with the relationship with the plant, or the relationship to your animal, or the relationship to the energy around you, or other people, or when you get into that space that everything you just feel and sense, and it's not just our that we're human and that we have a brain and we're so separate from the universe. We're actually all part of this, yes?
That's for sure. We're all, that's what I was saying. We're all so interconnected because we're all, I mean, not just all human beings have come from the same creator, but all other creations, all parts of the creation have come from the same creator as well. So we're also connected to, as you said, all the plants and animals and even the stars and the universe we're connected to.
Sometimes we think that we are human and we have a brain and, oh, we are above all, you know, we are better than, we are, you know, we see this with people acquiring education. We are better than the other one. You know, like how high up the totem pole can you get or how many million Facebook likes can you get, you know? And we tend to hold ourselves out, but is that really the answer, do you think? I don't, myself, you know, it's been brought up to me many times, you know, about doing this, that, or the other, and it just doesn't show up for me. Do you know what I mean? That holding self out or that holding self up concept. Can you share a little about that?
Yeah, well, I think you're...
the archetype
again,
you talk about.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think you're onto something really important because the... when we acknowledge that the universe, it has come from the one creator, whatever name we want to give that, we also have to acknowledge that the entire creation is connected and interdependent. And that also means that the creation itself is kind of a democratic existence where one thing is not to be held above another, and especially within the human family. It's not meant for any one group or community to be seen as superior to, especially in this age of when we're trying to build a global community or a culture of oneness. It's all about recognizing the equality and the sameness,
and
the similarities rather than the differences that will always be there, but they don't really matter as much as the similarities that have also been there forever.
You know, tattooed on them. And I would just speak to them, speak to their heart or soul, or just speak to their thoughts or whatever, and have a simple conversation, not even... recognizing or engaging in all of those other accolades, you know what I mean? I kind of, you know, when I do this radio show, this comes up all the time, is people will submit these big, long, you know, media kits to me, you know, and they'll write down what they want to say as an intro, and this is how it's going to be, and it's like, well, thank you for that, but I don't do that. And it's because I think you and I, you know, just as you and I are now speaking, we're speaking to each other's soul and heart and thoughts. We're not speaking through all of the accolades with their rules and regulations. You know what I mean? In other words, we're not saying, I believe, come follow me, to idea.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
we're all. We're all on this mystic journey together, and we're kind of holding hands alongside of each other.
Right.
No one's in front of or behind anyone else. It's a joint process because the process itself is designed to lead to unity and union. I mean, not only union with the Creator, which is what the mystics have always known throughout time, but it's also a journey of union towards recognizing and achieving and living with a consciousness of the oneness of humanity and all of creation. So with that sense of union as the goal, the process itself has to be the same kind of journey of union. I mean, if the if the journey is one of union with each other on the way, we'll have a much better chance of getting to that ultimate goal of union with the Creator.
We're talking about today, and the constant pull between the physical and spiritual realms. Oh my gosh, I'm so I got this one down. Okay, so Bob, here, get a load of this one. So I'm living my life, and then I'm saying, okay, well, then we're doing this, and then we're doing that, and the spiritual, and then the physical, and I go back and forth and back and forth. And then I delved into the spiritual really deep, right? And then it's like, okay, so the top half of my body was doing one thing, and the bottom half of my body was doing another. You know, the heaven and earth difference, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, you could feel the pull, and it's like, okay, am I getting up and I'm dizzy? Am I getting sitting down and I feel grounded? I think, you know, it's, to be able to experience a spiritual life in the physical and be able to enmesh it together is a journey that is so unique for every single person, but it also is so interesting when you share it, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, that's what our whole journey is about, is sharing it with each other as we're going about it, and then if and when we get to a place of a new realization from that journey that we're making, then it becomes even more imperative that we share it with others around us, because it's a journey of I mean it really is a journey of soul making, and what that's about the thing about the journey of soul making is that it's only possible in this physical realm. So that means that the separation between the physical and the spiritual is really at best arbitrary and at worst not at all really separate. Those two are one. We tend to see them and make them separate, but the soul couldn't make itself in the way that John Keats, the great poet, uses that concept. It wouldn't be possible without the physical world. He says, how are souls to be made? How are these sparks of divinity to have identity given them? How but by the medium of a world like this? So we need, I mean, even as souls, we need the physical realm to take on the process of soul making, because it's only through the experience of the so-called dualities of this world, of this physical world, that we come to recognize the higher reality of the oneness of all creation.
And really, if you look at quantum physics, it's that which you can conceive shows up, and by you just recognizing it and having that perception, therefore it appears. So if you're bringing the spiritual down through the quantum physics realm, you're bringing it into the physical, then by it, you know, you've given it now identity, and then you share it. That's how you bring the spiritual through to the physical, you know. And we think about it, we say, that only exists as if I can conceive of it. It shows up in my thoughts, it shows up in my being, and then I use words to define it, because that's a physical crossover. And then when you're sharing it, then you're delving into that physical dance of the universe, yes?
Right, yep. And that's what it is. It's a dance kind of with and between the physical world and the spiritual world, and through that dance they become one ultimately. So it's
right.
So soul making is a really interesting concept and process. I mean, it's about remembering who we are at our depths, about consciously living within the timeless pattern of transformation that is taking us along this journey, and allowing the universal motifs and archetypes to guide us. And that's what Marion Woodman was talking about when she said, true creativity, true soul making comes from that deep communion and communication with what Jung would call the archetypal world, And that's where the call to adventure leads us, is into the archetypal world, where not only do those apparent dichotomies or dualities become more apparent, but the only way, too, that they become unified as a greater whole.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's I think the majority is that the soul journeying is occurring now on the earth. But I also believe in, you know, through my own journey, I have this phrase would come up so consistently in my thoughts, is that that being brought in as the angel, and then it's like, oh, this human existence, this is dragging my butt down, you know? And it's like, it's sort of like, I already remembered and came in with it, and then had to, and then experienced the physical part of bringing that to humanity. So I do believe that there, we have both in us, where we're maybe mostly physical and then learning our spiritual part and to bring it together. But there also is many that are very spiritual, and they're like, okay, how am I going to bring this into the physical when they exist mostly in the spiritual part? So there may be similar people walking the earth, you know, that, and that's how this movement of bringing it forth in the past several decades, we were able to put the words together and say, yes, I get it. I got it. Now I understand. I hear it. And being open to it, do you think?
Definitely, yeah. Again, that's the way our collective journey of soul making is taking us as well. I mean, some might say right now, say that we're in the dark night of the collective soul with what's going on all around us today. But that's a crucial part of the process because it's kind of leading us not only into the darkness, but it's leading us through it. And that's a process by itself, a process of transformation that is necessary for us to move further and further along to be able to gain a lasting sense of union. So the mystic way, if people are familiar with that, it becomes a pretty familiar 5-step process of awakening, purification, illumination, the dark night of the soul, and finally after that is when we achieve that sense of union and unity with everything around us, mm-hmm. our Creator and everything else in the creation. So that dark night of the individual soul and the dark night of the collective soul are necessary for getting to that destination of union.
Don't you think we see this in civilization? We see this in our history. You know, people will say, oh, an event came up, and when the event came up, then it was how people walked through it. As an example, mm-hmm. I mean, we could say 9/11, we could say Hurricane Katrina, we could say someone has cancer, we could say someone, the school shootings. All of these were markers that existed to have a label, but yet they were a process of walking through things.
Right, right. And a necessary part of that process, not the... not 9/11 by itself, or Katrina, or any of those specific, mm-hmm. but what they bring about, and what they initiate a process. But what they're really doing is they're speeding up a process that's already in process. And so, an event like those that you mentioned really are there to speed up a process that's already in motion, and that process is the process of transformation. And with events like that, like those that you mentioned, it happens on both the personal and the collective level for all those involved at the same time.
I think that's a time when we say what is important in life, and it's sort of like we see people abandoning homes, getting rid of their cars, skipping all of these other markers in life that we thought were so vitally important in the materialistic world, and we say, are those vitally important, and why do we continuously have them to... it's almost like we're using them as a token to say we're safe, we're stable, we're taken care of, all of these other things. But that's in a material world when really, is it not that we need to maybe amp up our idea of trust, of hope, of faith, of the idea that life is going to be okay and maybe we can reach out instead of reaching up all the time, yes?
Yeah, definitely. And those are all really good examples of how and when the material or the physical world merges with the spiritual world realm to create this opportunity for transformation. Without the two, there wouldn't be the progress that we experience. And it's when those kinds of moments happen that you referred to earlier that the process that's already in motion is sped up and gives us a greater opportunity for that realization of how they're interconnected. The spiritual realm is dependent upon the physical in order to move this process of transformation along. So, yeah, they're both essential parts of the journey that we're talking about.
And, you know, we talk about a journey and we talk about a path, we talk about a process. There's always, and you say this quite a bit in your book, about a beginning, middle, and an end. And almost I find that it is soul unfolding versus somewhere to get, fix, cure, or cut out, that kind of idea. Do you know what I mean? In other words, I truly believe that when we will come to a point, I believe, in the near future, where a lot of these 27 letters of the alphabet, that we have them conjured up into words that bring forth thoughts and bring forth history and labels and all that judgment and everything, that we will start to shake up that alphabet again and come up with a different language. Because when the soul evolves and the soul expands, or it's almost like a flower is growing, yes, the flower has a beginning, middle, and end, but what we are delving into when we talk about the heart and the soul is all of that process. And how it, I guess almost like I see it as when we talk about life, we say this life. I almost see life as a continuum, but this is a lifetime. Do you know what I'm saying? So in other words, there's this consistent line across the top of the page, and each lifetime is just the marker or the years versus saying this is our life here, and it's so singular, and this is it.
Yeah, definitely is a continuum. The journey that we're talking about is a continuum, and there's many continuums within a larger continuum.
Right.
So, it might help to talk a little bit more about the larger continuum, which is what the book is based on. The mystic journey is about the continuum from the eternal world that brings us to this physical world that then leads us to back to the spiritual or the eternal world. So that's the big picture sense of the continuum that we as souls are on. We come from the eternal realm as souls. We're placed in a womb for 9 months to develop as an unborn soul would, and then we're thrust into this physical realm to learn from and gain all of the experiences and lessons from the clash of opposites that we experience in this world, and they are meant to prepare us and make us even more ready to return to the eternal realm as a soul when it leaves the physical body at the time of passing. So that's really the larger continuum that we as souls are on. And many people have referred to this earth as a school. You know, we're sent to this earth just as we would be sent to school. And, you know, however many grades or levels of learning it has, whether it's 12 or 16 or however many levels, there are all these lessons to be learned from this ultimate journey that we're on, the journey of the soul. And one of the one of the many lessons that comes from that, from looking at it as a journey of the soul from the eternal realm to the physical realm and back to the eternal realm, is that it's a progressively transformational process that shifts us from desiring things for itself or for ourselves to desiring to give of ourselves to others. So once we get a little further along this continuum, we realize that an important part of the process itself is learning to give back to others what we've learned and or acquired on our journey. So then the whole process becomes one of understanding our infinite nature from the deepest level. And when we do that, we see that it's really only oneness that exists. It's really only union and unity that exists in this creation.
You know, it's interesting. I have this vision that comes up quite often. And when we exit this dimension that we're in, it's almost like I see an angel, and you walk through this like mist, and they get on the other side, and it's sort of like, you know, when a dog comes out of the rain and they're shaking it all off, you know? I almost see it like we go through and we shake it all off and we're going, holy smokes, that was an experience. And then you share with everyone else there, like, whoa, this is what we did and this is what I did and isn't that cool and everything. And it's like, good. You know, I think sometimes people get so afraid, they believe that when people pass over that they're still holding on to grief and shame and pain and sorrow. But really it's just you shake off that humanness. It's like, you know, it's sort of like you have this really esoteric philosophical conversation where you don't have this stuff of, well, what did I do today? Well, I had a flat tire on my car kind of idea. You know what I mean? It's just so, it's very freeing when you can say that there's so much more out there. There's so much bigger out there. Look at all of this experience and this existence. Look at this universe. Look at things with potential versus being stuck in this is the way it is. Ba-boom. Yes?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely about that. When we have that big picture perspective on not just our life, but the creation that we're part of, then we come to the realization that it's not about escape from this world, either momentarily or even permanently. It's more about the work in the world that is that's really our goal. And the more work in the world we do for others, to serve others in some way, to help others, to assist others in their journey, the more we realize that not only that there's a distinct service orientation to our spiritual growth, but that's really the process of soul making at its essence.
Yeah, I mean, getting out of the idea that it's saprophytic kind of survivalist kind of life, and that we're really here to be able to be like, you know, I have this picture. There was a time, I take pictures all the time, so I go out in nature and things show up. One time, it was a period of like 2 or 3 weeks, and everything I would look at, it would be, I live in the south, so would it be these cicadas? And they were, I would see them one day holding on to the underside of the tree, and then the next day their shell would be on the ground because they had evolved overnight. So I saw all these signs of transformation. So I can evolve. I can change. It will be okay, and life will go on. It's so vitally important. So in other words, sometimes we say we as humans, but it has to be hard. It has to be this way, and oh my gosh, it's going to blah, blah, blah. Based upon other people's stories, when really we say, but it's an experience, it's a transformation. Look at the cicadas, look at the butterflies, look at the snakes. You know, to be able to look at it and say, is this all part of our universe? So what am I really fearing, right?
Yeah, that's great. There's so many really important lessons for us from the world of nature around us. And if we can learn those lessons from nature, we can see how they apply to our own lives. I mean, the journey of the soul is really the only journey that leads to personal and collective transformation. And that's because it's the most pressing journey of our time. Where the world is not going to get out of it. Dark night of the collective soul until we each individually undergo our own process of soul making. As our individual consciousness evolves, so will the consciousness of the whole. So our individual transformations are what transform the world that we're living in.
Right, and I think our individual ones are very important. You know, I look at it now, there's a lot of stuff on television and other places in the media, and people will say, did you see this or did you see that? And I think sometimes as people are in the spiritual spot that they're in for the moment, they may say, I need to stay away from that. However, once you come through certain spots in your transformation, you will start to be able to not be siloing yourself off. And like I'll listen to them, I'll say, oh, that is so cool that they're saying that. And they're like, but that's a bad thing. And I said, do you see that potentially when they say those things, it's sort of like, oh, it stops you. You'll stop, you'll look at it, the essence of it, and you'll listen. But then you will say, oh my gosh, that's great because that person has brought something to the forefront that everybody might have been afraid to speak about or that anyone wanted to deal with. And now we could say, are we going to choose to continue to go along that path and ride that dogma feed? Or are we going to say, I'm going to rise, and we're going to say, you know what, that is not the choice that I wish to have. So really, by the soul's transformation and its evolution, we come through all of these spots and we say, you know, I see it, I got it. Okay, but I'll go through it, and then on the other side is like, I'll make a different choice. You know, I think about it when people say, oh, I'm not feeling well, and then they get a diagnosis, and then they're all sad. And I'm like, that's the most fabulous thing. You have a starting point, so let's work from there, versus saying, oh, my gosh, it's this thing that's now put its thumb on me, you know? So I think it's about how can we look at when we come through these spaces that there's now a choice, that there's now a potential, that there's now something that will say, okay, next.
Yeah, right. That's really what it comes down to. It's a matter of choice of what we want to, are willing to, or what we're drawn to learn from this experience of journeying through this physical realm as a soul with a body. It is about our choice. And the whole concept of union, which is the goal of the mystic, union or oneness as the goal, that's also learned through our experience that we have in this physical world. So once it becomes a part of our awareness, once it is really, truly learned, then it becomes a practice of living with and within that union becomes a practice of living in oneness. And as we practice living in oneness and in union every moment of our lives, then that's how we not only live within our infinite nature that we're all born with, but it's also how we transform all those dichotomies and dualities around us into that same sense of oneness.
Yeah, I think the idea of we're fighting people, we're fighting words, we're fighting dogma, we are fighting illnesses. It's all a fight out there. And then what that fight will do is sometimes that brings us to that spot of, I think you equated in your book about the dark night of the soul. It definitely is a conceptual part of that. I think that's when all of a sudden something will say, you know what, let it all go. Just plain sit down and let it all go. I'm sure you've had these times, and I've had them too, is when I just sat down and said, you know what, I am just going to sit here for 24 hours and just sit here for whatever it takes, because you know what, I'm just going to let it all go, because there is no control. There is no fixing. There is no solutionizing. There is no, reason why, because it all comes down to that oneness is just, I mean, seriously, you're just breathing. What else are you doing? You're doing nothing else but breathing and existing in that moment. And I think once that all sheds away is sometimes when people say that's a scary part, I don't know if I could do it. So it kind of keeps people on that tenuous edge.
You were hitting on something really key there, the whole idea of recognizing, getting into and going with the flow, the organic flow of things around us. I mean, that's one of the things, one of the most important lessons that we can learn from nature is to recognize and become part of that organic flow of the creation around us. Once we learn that, then it becomes so much easier to let go of the things that we think we need to hold on to when we really don't at all, because they may be just the holding on may be preventing us from moving forward. So yeah, it's really about getting into that flow and going with it and seeing where it will lead us. And it will lead us to places that we not only might not have thought it would, but that places that we really do want to be going toward when we go with that flow.
Must not have their minds or their thoughts in shape. They must not care about themselves. They must not have their home. In other words, they're broken or there's a problem with them. So we need to acclimate them back into how we believe they should be. Yet when many times people work with people who are homeless, we could say, I see where they are. And I see that they are just at that place of letting things go. And they're existing and being as themselves. In other words, we always think that we have to dress up everyone to look good, walk like a duck, quack like a duck, because you have to be a duck, when versus there's not only ducks on this earth, you know? And the idea that we have to line everybody up so that they could be all in this zen kind of moment or this zero point or everybody's going to be all one, it's kind of an idea that how does that universe even create that in the first place? Not everything is the same.
Yeah, that's the nature of the physical world. It's made up of so many differences that's one of our challenges and greatest tasks in this world of dualities and differences, is that we need to learn how to live with those differences and accept them, accept each other as we are, because those differences will always exist.
But I call it more the uniqueness. I would say the uniqueness of each and every being is really exactly what allows us to see them in the first place. If we walked down the street and saw 10 of us, we would be like, oh, I'm sick of seeing that all the time, you know? It would be repetition. It would be something that like, oh, yeah, I got it. But if you see something unique, it tends to draw your eye. It draws your intuitiveness. It draws your you just want to go out and you want to touch it, feel it, see it, sense it. So I think sometimes when we say the universe, everybody wants to be this oneness. Everybody is oneness with the energy, but not everybody is oneness in the same moment, spirit, time. I think that's what creates our experience in the first place, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, that's. I think that's why we are created. I like the word uniqueness because we all are truly unique in our own way. And I mean, actually, one of the ways that we can all tell our stories is on three different levels, and all three at the same time too. There is the unique level, which is where we're like no one else. We're totally, truly unique in our own way. Then there's the group level where we're like some others and not like others that are not like this group. And then the third level is the universal level where we're all alike in that same way.
Right.
So we go back and forth between those three levels of awareness and of how we connect and relate to each other. And that's partly where we end up with such a problem in relationships, both personal and collective. If we understood that everyone is unique in their own way, that would be a big benefit. If we understood that there are groups that have similarities within each group, but differences across groups, that would be could be accepted as okay as well. And when we're in that third level, when we realize that we're all alike in certain ways,
right.
And that third level, the universal, is really the archetypal level. When we recognize that, then we're also it becomes we've kind of reached the goal. But all three are valid and exist and always will exist. And we go back and forth between the three many times in our lives and in each day. But if we recognize that they are there, that each of those three levels exist and always will, we won't have the problems between groups that we are having now in this world. I mean, the whole level of groups has evolved from family to village to city to city-state
right.
to nations. And now we're really in the process of building a global community. If we can realize that they all exist at the same time, there'll be less problem. We will be able to have less problems with the differences that there exist between those levels.
You know, it's so interesting. Facebook just recently took away their business page where someone would just be an entity and they would share, you know, stories and blogs and stuff. They took it away and they said, now you need to make a Facebook group. You would need to quack like you because then it gives me validity, you know. In other words, I am so afraid to exist into this universal being existence that I need to be able to attach myself to someone or something else because otherwise I fear I might not exist. And that is a very, it's a very interesting place for society to be right now.
Yeah, especially if we have to do that out of fear of not being part of a group or community or whatever it happens to be.
Right.
I mean, that should be our natural pull or desire to, because we all are not only connected with whatever group we choose or want to be connected with, we're also, whether we know it or not, connected beyond any of our groups that we choose to be part
mm-hmm.
of, or because we're ultimately all part of the human family. I mean, that's the group and community that we need to keep in mind as well. And once we get to that level of recognizing that we're all members of the same human family, then the differences and separations that also do exist don't present as much of a problem as they do now. But that's
right.
Kind of a strange move for something like a social media thing like Facebook to be making.
Right, but also what it does too, and in closing, we'll talk for a second on this, is that it also institutes labels, because then it now pitches us against each other. In other words, it's going to say, I am this, and I'm going to be the haves, I'm going to be this, I'm going to be the have-nots. That's what groups do. I think if we would further disband a group and say, I choose to engage in dance in this experience, but I'm not attached and collecting more labels. I think the soul's journey is about releasing labels and seeing the spirit of the person versus turning around and saying, now we have to have this label because I belong here, so you can recognize me as such, right?
Right. It's definitely about that. And it's also about we've been talking about the journey of the soul, the goal of the journey of the soul as being one of unity. And if that's the goal of the journey of the soul, then that goal of union creates a larger, all-inclusive label, which we need to be thinking a lot more about. And that is a label like a world citizen, or being a member of the global community, or being a member of the human family. That's our larger, wider, all-inclusive identity that we need to be thinking a lot more about. And if we can think in terms of that all-inclusive identity, we don't get worried or bothered by any of the smaller, exclusive identities that we also carry. Honoring the one identity that we all share, the wider, all-inclusive identity that we all share as human beings.
I have this dream, Bob, and all the people, there would be this big grand hall, and people would come, and they would be blinded, and I'll say, well, you could put a blindfold on them or whatever, but they would be blinded to certain things. They would be blinded to if someone was a celebrity or a homeless person, someone with AIDS, someone who was young, someone who was old, someone who was clean or someone who was dirty, or someone who was broken or someone who was whole. And we would all be in this room and they would be blinded with this, what's going on. And you would say, can you just sit and be just in this space? You know?
Yeah, just take those blinders away and see the reality. and it's not, I mean, when we do take those blinders away, skin color or any of those other differences aren't important. And that's really what about getting to the goal of union and oneness is all about. When we get to that goal, when we see with the eyes of oneness, then we see each other as eternal souls, and we have no differences.
And that's a great place to be. So, Bob, I think I think that's a great place to end today. I think that's definitely when you get there, it's just like you just go ah. It's almost like you it's almost like a flower in the sun kind of idea, don't you think?
Definitely. Yep. It's such a warm, comforting place to be.
Right.
When you can see everything with the eyes of oneness.
Bob, can you share with the listeners how to find out more information about you? That would be wonderful.
Yeah, it's all pretty much on my website, which is robertatkinson.net. And you can find all of my books there, and that'll lead you to Amazon. But there is a lot of background information about the books and myself on the website.
Very good. Well, Bob, it was such a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you so much for joining us, because I think each time you and I talk, it's about sharing out to the ripple effect. And I think some people who might be saying, I'm confused, I don't get it, I don't know, but there's others that he could say, oh, let me tell you a story. And that's how we share. Yes.
Right. That's it. in a nutshell, sharing our stories, learning how we're all the same person with different faces.
Yep. I always say, what kind of drag are you wearing today, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, good. Well, Bob, thank you so much for joining us. It was such a pleasure.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for joining us today. And do share your stories, because each soul depends on it. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. Till tomorrow, have a great day.
Today we discussed many life-changing concepts. Who do you turn to, and how do you know what is best when faced with a health crisis? Dr. Jeanette is a patient advocate. She listens to the patient, the doctors, and the family, clarifies the health issues and concerns, then helps the patient make the best choices going forward. If you would like help implementing change into your life and health, we can talk and see where you are stuck and how to improve the quality of your life. Check the link on the bottom of today's show page or visit drjeanettegallagher.com to schedule a phone appointment today.